Good evening and welcome to another episode of Behind the Mask. I'm your host, Ed English. And tonight we're going to be talking with Chris Steros of Top Shelf Productions. Did I pronounce that right, Chris?
That's correct.
Okay. As always, the phone lines are open at 646-200-4071. The chat room is also open if you want to post a question for Chris there. Also, the podcast after the show's done, usually about an hour after it's available here at Blog Talk Radio, and will be posted on our blog as well. If you think of any questions, you can always post them there, and we'll make sure that they get to Chris. To get right into it, Chris Steros is the publisher of Top Shelf Productions, which you can find at Top Shelf Comics with an X, COMIX. .com. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. It's great to have. Thanks for having me, man.
So, Top Shelf, how long have you been in business?
Well, my business partner Brett Warnock and I both kind of jumped into comics in '94. Him with his first mini comic, and me with my first zine. And you know, we started hitting the convention trail and got to be friends and realized we really had a similar vision about what we wanted to do with comics and graphic novels at the time. And so we formed a partnership in 1997 and started Top Shelf Productions Inc. And you know, so for the past 15 years or so, we've been publishing graphic novels and have about 300 of them out to date, and we're proud of what we've done over the years. It's been a fun run.
So, have you been a comic fan all your life?
Oddly enough, no. In Brett's case, he was. In my case, no. I was actually a heavy metal lead guitarist in the 70s and 80s, and playing hard rock and metal and stuff throughout the 80s. And then after I retired from the music scene, I really needed an artistic outlet because I just felt empty without one, and discovered comics late in life, and really came into it from the indie scene. Things of course like Sandman and V for Vendetta, but of course a lot of the stuff like the Dan Clowes books, 8-Ball, and those kind of things really inspired me to say, wow, comics have so much potential. I'd like to sort of become a part of it. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do in the business first, so I kind of just did a lot of reading and then started a zine, and then one thing led to another, and a publishing company was born.
So how did that epiphany happen? I mean, you're rocking out, and was that dying off, and you're just kind of
I had been playing nightclubs for about 11 years, and
to be honest, you don't sound old enough to have been playing rock in the 70s.
Yeah, I'm pushing 50 now, so it's getting there, but. My hearing was really going. After playing nightclubs for 11 years, I had really lost a lot of hearing, and my ears were in really, really bad shape. And the band had kind of broken up and run its course, and the metal had sort of been replaced by grunge, and I kind of realized the writing was on the wall for somebody of my talents and skills and interests, So I hung up the guitar for a while, and and missed it, but it was a change of life kind of thing. And then, one day I just, getting bored, passed the comic book shop and spent some, went to go visit in there and hang out, and ended up picking up a copy of Alan Moore's V for Vendetta. And it was that book that I often say hit me like my first Black Sabbath album hit me when I was a kid, and where I had that same epiphany with music as with comics. It was like, I'd like to do this. I'd like to get involved somehow. I didn't realize comics could be so powerful, and to really combine words and art in such a way that was more powerful than words or image separately, more powerful than novels separately, more powerful than art. It just seemed to, the merger of the two just seemed to be so powerful and kind of underutilized in the medium as well. And I thought that maybe jumping in eventually starting to publish a company with Brett, that we could help do our tiny part to help steer the ship in a direction that was slightly more literary and really tried to maximize what the medium could offer the general public.
So now you're based out of Georgia, but your partner Brett is in Oregon. How did the two of you meet?
Well, we met on the convention circuit. We were both road warriors and still are these years later. I mean, we still do 20 conventions a year, so we are one of the most traveling indie publishers out there. But so we met on the circuit, places like San Diego and the Small Press Expo. And, we just realized that we really had the same taste in comics, which was we loved good comics. We weren't we liked things with a lot of subtext and a lot of heart and unique art styles, but we weren't elitist about what we were into. You know, we liked all of comics. I mean, we really respected the superhero stuff and everything else that was out there, and Brett was a big fan of that stuff. I didn't come from that world when I was younger,
right.
So I wasn't as aware of it as he was, you know, but at the same time, we didn't feel like we were special because we were doing indie books. We just felt happy to be a part of the whole community of comics, you know, and we're very friendly with everybody involved in the industry. And then we also realized we complemented each other really well. He was an excellent graphic designer, an excellent artist. I came more from the story editing and I guess sort of business side of things, and together we were able to form a partnership and do different things, where being on the opposite coast really didn't hurt us, you know, and especially in the age of the internet and you know, having a FedEx and cheap long distance and all that kind of stuff, and that fact that we met up on the road quite often, we were able to coordinate things very easily, you know, through all those virtual technologies.
So now, what was your first step? With, you know, you guys got together and you found that you were kindred spirits, and you decided, hey, let's take the next step. Let's put a company together. Let's start down that road. For those people listening who might, you know, want to do something like that, or at least try to publish their own work or anything like that, what were the things that you guys had to work out from a business standpoint that says, okay, we're gonna be a business, and we're going to be a business about comics?
Well,
what
I mean,
you have to go through?
You definitely have to learn a lot of lessons about running corporations, all that kind of stuff. And the truth is, if you knew everything you were going to learn before you actually had to learn it, you probably would just run screaming to the hills and stay away from it altogether. I mean, you see that in Hollywood a lot, where really, really, really famous, you know, actors, when their kids say they want to be actors, they tell them, don't do it, you know? And you're thinking, but wait, you're on the top of the heap. You're the success story. Even they know how hard it is, you know? Much less the poor actors that didn't quite make it, you know, and their kids jump into it. And it's just one of those things that the reality of starting companies, getting a company off the ground is very difficult. Sustaining a company is very difficult. And you have to learn a lot of things. I mean, the nice thing is that you tend to start out those kind of endeavors small, and so you make all your mistakes and you learn all your lessons when it's with small numbers instead of giant numbers, and hopefully you internalize some things so that when the numbers keep getting bigger and bigger, you know, that you can suffer through these things. But it's not easy. Indie publishing is very hard. Publishing is hard in general, and every year, you know, you basically need some miracle or some big thing to go successful to keep everything going, because you know, we've always been an art house publisher. We've always put art before commerce. We don't sit down and think, what's going to make us money? We always look at projects and go, we love this project. And even if we don't think there's an audience for it, we're going to create one. You know, we're going to find an audience for this book because people need to see it. You know, and that's been our philosophy all along. So we've never minded when art met commerce, but we've always been a publisher that's tried to put out books we believed in and then get people to join us, you know.
So then what was your first project? Did you guys kind of collaborate on a story and you wrote and he drew, or did you guys already have things in your, you know, portfolio, so to speak, that you
had
to work with?
We had a lot of different, you know, friends already from the convention circuit whose work we admired. And so while, you know, I had a little bit of writing experience, I, you know, have not written books we've published. I definitely edit them, and I am a story editor that works very closely with a lot of our authors to get their stories great. And while Brett didn't draw any of our stories, he had drawn some of his own comics before, so he's always been a great art director and did all the pre-press and production and a lot of design work on our books. But our very first publication was a guy by the name of Pete Sigmund Garner, and it was a book called The Hey Mister After School Special. And still to this day, Hey Mister is one of the funniest, you know, books, graphic novels we've ever done. And we're really excited because come full circle, 15 years later, Pete is actually working on a new Hey Mister graphic novel for us, and hopefully it'll be ready by next year and we'll be able to put it out, and we're really excited about that. But, you know, for people who aren't familiar with us, we some of the high profile books that we publish are like Alan Moore's From Hell, his Jack the Ripper masterpiece, Lost Girls, his epic erotic masterpiece, and also The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the new volume 3 that's been coming out over the last few years. That's one of our books. Also, Craig Thompson's Blankets, Jeff Lemire's Essex County, Robert Venditti's The Surrogates, and also in the all ages realm, Andy Runton's Owly and Christian Slade's Corgi and James Kochalka's Johnny Boo. And those are kind of some of the titles that maybe some of your listeners might be familiar with.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Alan Moore, especially with the V for Vendetta, and everybody recognizes that name.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys, you're not just about trying to pull in a name that everybody's going to recognize. You're also about good quality.
Yeah, mostly
work
we're building
somebody.
People from the ground up, you know. And even today with our schedule, I mean, you know, they're, you know, about a 25% to 30% of our schedule is, you know, Alan Moore level properties, you know, Craig Thompson level properties, guys that are really established. You know, a third of our schedule is guys that we have developed into bigger names that we still do projects with, like Craig Thompson and Jeff Lemire and Andy Runton and, you know, Nate Powell and you know, Keegan MacLeod and stuff. And then a third of our project is introducing newcomers to the industry, like, you know, Jess Fink and her new book Chester 5000, which is just amazing, and lots of other new people, you know, Ludovic DeBrum's Lucille that came out this year, and Keegan MacLeod's Infinite Kung Fu, which debuted in, you know, in 2011, you know,
right.
those books were debuts from new creators that we felt that, you know, the American audience and the English speaking audience should know about, you know, we're very excited to be a company that takes a lot of chances on new talent and then gets them out there.
Now, one of the things that I noticed when reading up on Top Shelf is that you span the gamut. You handle the mature themes, but you also have some family-friendly, all-audience material and even have, you know, a kids' club.
Right.
Was that something you guys thought about ahead of time?
Well, I mean, in the 90s, you know, for the comics fans that were around then and really into it, you know, there was a big push to get comics taken seriously, you know, because the media was starting to pay attention, Hollywood was starting to pay attention, libraries were starting to pay attention, and there was enough mature material out there to start getting to people to take comics seriously. But at the time, if you remember, every article written by everybody at the time had the same title: Biff, Pam, Pow, comics aren't just for kids anymore. You know, like,
right.
It was such an eye-opener that comics aren't just for children, you know. So a lot of us publishers really spent a lot of time producing mature literary work, you know, trying to sort of redeem our art form and have it be taken seriously. Well, by the year 2000, in a lot of ways, we had succeeded. You know, the articles were starting to lose that goofy title. They were just starting to accept it. The term graphic novel in the early 2000s stopped having to be explained every time it was used, and all of a sudden it just became a term people understood. And comics started to be accepted as a thing to do. You know, graphic novels is a thing to do. So in some ways we were successful. But at the same time in the early 2000s, it kind of hit a lot of us indie publishers at the same time that, you know what, in our race to have comics grow up, we also sort of forgot the kids, because you need an entry point as well, you know. And so there are some great kids comic books out there, but we decided we would, you know, be a part of that and try to develop some kids comics on our own. At that time, around that time, I had met Andy Runton at a convention here in the South, who's the creator of Owly. And he had just had a little mini comic at that time, a very short mini comic about this owl. And we got to be friendly and toss some ideas back and forth of, you know, what I thought he could do to make it a little bit better. And, you know, not only did he make it better, he made it fantastic. And we decided to adopt Owly. And, of course, Owly's become a huge success for us and for Andy, and is such a touching and an emotional story and character. And Andy does such a great job on it. And that title helped us move on to Christian Slade's Corgi, James Kochalka's Johnny Boo, and this last year we launched Pirate Penguin versus Ninja Chicken, Okie Dokie Donuts, and, you know, we really have a lot of great kids' properties now. And our one of our most popular books of the year is the free comic book day book we do, which is called the Top Shelf Kids Club, which features, you know, short stories by a lot of our all-ages creators in it.
Well, now, in looking at the Kids Club, I want to segue a little bit because you have an app for Top Shelf Kids Club, but you also have the Top Shelf digital comics app that's for your whole catalog.
Right, and so, you know, we recently launched our apps for the iPad and iPhone, and we recently totally embraced the digital technology and digital versions of all our books, and, you know, a lot of stuff's available through Comixology now, and Iverse, and Google, and Amazon, and the Kindle, and the Nook, and you know, we're really trying to embrace this future world and do what we do best, which is have our stuff featured digitally and also print very nice deluxe boutique editions of our books as well, and offer both of them. And we did launch two apps instead of one just because we do a lot of stuff that's quite mature oriented, and when we do like our Top Shelf Kids Club or our kids books, you know, we tend to keep them separate from the others, and if the kids want to buy them and peruse them, we usually have them in a section on our table so that they can look at those without, you know, opening up some of the stuff that's more mature. Well, same thing with our apps. We wanted a place where if a parent was cool with their kid having a Kids Club app on their phone and they could have access to all our books that way they would feel safe in knowing that all these books digitally were aimed at a younger audience.
So in developing these apps and thinking about digital marketing, what might somebody find when they download the Top Shelf Digital Comics app?
Well, you know, I mean, the apps are great in that, you know, they work on the iPhone or the iPad. The reading experience is really, really neat, the way the panels go by and the pages go by. And, you know, I would encourage everybody, the apps are free, download them. There's a lot of free previews of our books on the app, so you can download, you know, a lot of like 10-page segments of books for free.
Cool.
And then, like our Top Shelf Kids Club free comic book day book from last year is free on the app. So, you know, if you get the Kids Club app, you can download that book for free. And it features 4-page stories from 6 of our kids' titles, so you can see if you like them. And then
the
prices of the digital books are very reasonable, you know. I mean, it's still the Wild West out there on what's the best pricing structure for digital stuff. So we're kind of experimenting with that to see what the market, how the market really wants that to be, you know. But, you know, in general, like the digital books are, you know, around half price of the print books, or maybe in some cases even less. You know, sometimes they run promotions here and there on those. And we kind of want to use the digital apps as a way to get people into our catalog and go get people to go to print, and then have our print books get people to say, well, yeah, I want to take all this stuff with me all the time as well and download our app so that everything's really portable. So I think they're both going to feed off each other well.
And speaking of feeding off of it, for somebody who is hearing, you know, about your company and about some of your titles and the names that you guys, represent, how could somebody, you know, if they want, they're the kind of guy who wants the hard, you know, the piece of paper in their hand, how can they find Top Shelf Comics?
Well, I mean, obviously, there are dedicated comic book shops all throughout the country, and most people into comics know exactly where they are, but they're easy to find with the comic shop locator service on the net, or, you know, go to your local comic store, see what they have in stock. If you know a particular title that you want, they can order it for you. Books are also available, you know, at Barnes & Noble and independent booksellers as well. But if you have trouble finding the titles that you're interested in, just come to our website, www.topshelfcomics.com, and you check out our catalog there. You know, you can order stuff online as well. And our website's really clearly marked so that you can it'll point you to the digital versions if you want to download those from the different vendors, or you can buy the physical books from us and we'll mail them to you. I mean, we pack and ship books all the time, and we run a, you know, pretty healthy web business for our stuff. A lot of people do come to us to buy books.
Now, you mentioned boutique quality. For some of, is that the only print format that you use? Is it hardback, or do you guys use the I mean, do you do all of the different print formats?
All our projects, you know, we treat all our projects as unique entities. Like, you know, some publishers have a very uniform format to what they do. You know, like a manga publisher, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tend to keep everything very similar in format. We tend to look at every project as a unique event, you know, and sometimes that means it will be very tiny, and sometimes that means it will be very large, sometimes it means they will have very thick, fancy paper in them, in other cases it will be very newsprinty and urban, in some cases it will have French flaps on it, in some cases it will be hardcover, in some cases it will have a textured cover, and other times it will have a very slick matte cover on it. You know, it just depends on, you know, what the feel is and what kind of mood we're going for. You know, like with Infinite Kung Fu, which was one of our, you know, biggest hits of 2011, is still going really strong. It's an amazing, amazing graphic novel. You know, it's got brash, you know, yellow themes, brash yellow inside colors, and then a sort of a what's called a flexi binding, which is a really kind of a cross between a soft and a hard cover. It's kind of a unique binding that gives it sort of kind of that hip flare to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where something, you know, else like Blankets, you know, that we just re-released as a super deluxe hardcover, is designed to be just a beautiful prestige, you know, bookshelf oriented item. So everything is designed to kind of reflect the tone of what's inside, you know.
I think that's great. I mean, each work is an individual, and is treated, you know, individually.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Now, for those, you know, when you're looking for new talent and bringing people into your fold, do you kind of have a bank of writers and artists, that if you get this new guy and you saw some of his graphic work and you think he'd be great, do you try to pair him with a writer to maybe see what he can do with a story versus just doing some graphic representations?
Sure, that's a very good question, because you know, comics come to publishers in lots of different ways, you know, and talent comes to publishers in lots of different ways. In Top Shelf case, we sometimes hook up writers and artists together, like we, of course, do with the Alan Moore books, where, you know, like Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill are working on League together, or Alan Moore and Melinda worked on Law School together, or Alan and Eddie Campbell did From Hell, that kind of thing. And then on some of our books, like Homeland Directive, Robert Venditti and Mike Huddleston paired up, and Robert and Brett Weatherly did the Surrogate series together, and so forth. But in general, paying up writers and artists is a very expensive proposition, because you generally are paying artists page rates or, you know, rather large advances to spend the time to draw something that they didn't necessarily create themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, just depends on how high profile you think that project's going to be, it's something that you might not be able to earn that money back. You know, the project may not actually be able to break even. So for the most part, we have been a publisher that kind of focused on creator-owned stuff, where the people wrote and drew their own books, like Jeffrey Brown stuff with Unlikely and Clumsy and Craig Thompson and Andy Runton and, you know, and Alex Robinson and Jeff Lemire and Matt Kent. And all these guys are great writers and great artists in their own right, and they write and draw their own stuff. So a lot of that work can be done a little bit more on spec with a little bit less upfront money, and so Top Shelf can spend all its money on printing and marketing and distribution and conventions and getting the book out there, and then hopefully if it sells well, everybody makes good money on the back end. And that's more the model that Top Shelf's had to live on in the last 15 years. But in the truth, in the indie comics community, a great majority of the creators sort of write and draw their own work. So there is more great material out there than we can absorb, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys have won quite a few awards over the years. What are some of what are some of the awards that you have won? And
well, I mean, some of the awards that people might be familiar with are the Eisner Awards, which are
mm-hmm.
given out at the Comic-Con every year, and the Harvey Awards, which are given out at the Baltimore Comic-Con each year recently, and the Ignatz Awards, which are given out at the Small Press Expo in Bethesda, Maryland, every year. And, you know, over the years, over the last decade or so, we've, you know, I probably won two or three dozen of those awards, including, you know, several times for Best Graphic Novel of the Year. Books like From Hell, and Blankets and Swallowing Me Whole, for example, won the best graphic novel of the year at the Eisner Awards. And, you know, to me, that's always been like the best picture of the year award, if it was an Oscar
right.
equivalent, you know, because that is like the most substantial literary release of the year. And you know, and so in the last decade, you know, three times, we've hit that jackpot at the Eisners. And when we've done similarly well at the, you know, Harveys and Ignatz's over the years with titles like those and others. And you know, and Owlie and Tricked and Too Cool to Be Forgotten and Essex County and Three Fingers. And, you know, a lot of books have won those big awards. Essex County won a big American Library Association award a few years back. And last
wow.
year was in Canada, a televised Canada Reads competition, ended up in the top five books of the decade in Canada and caused a real fervor for that title across Canada because people pay attention to that big literacy effort on Canadian television. And so, you know, we've been lucky. I don't think we win more awards than other publishers. I think other publishers have, you know, won just many or lots more than us. But we're always very grateful when we, you know, we do win an award. I never really think or expect that we'll win awards with the stuff we do, but it's always gratifying if you do something that strikes a chord and, you know, and gets people to pay attention in that way. It's definitely nice for our artists, you know, and our cartoonists when they can take home something like that.
Definitely. Now, we've talked about your website, topshelfcomics.com, and your apps that are available for the iOS platform. Where else can people find your online presence?
Well, you know, Comixology carries a full line of our stuff. Iverse carries a full line of our stuff. Google Books, the Kindle, you know, there's all kinds of applications for our things, you know, so you can find our digital stuff everywhere. And you know, the main thing is, you know, come to our website, take a look. For every title that you see there, you know, where it says add to cart or whatever, there's also a button that says buy digital. And if you click on that, it'll show you for that particular title where it's all available. So, you know, we have stuff coming out with Graphically now, and there's about 8 digital vendors that have our books, but not quite everybody has all of our titles yet. We're trying to get about 100 titles out everywhere. And you know, everybody is every week releasing 3 or 4 more books, so everybody's getting caught up at a different pace. So we're, you know, slowly but surely we'll have everything everywhere, but this is the year where all that's taking place.
But you guys also have a Facebook page, right? Facebook.com/topshelfcomics?
Yes, we do, yep. And then all of us in the staff, you know, tweet a little bit too. Lee Walton does, Brett Warnock does, I do. And then we have the Top Shelf Twitter feed as well, so you can follow us there. I'm at Chris Staros on Facebook and Twitter. And you know, and we also do 20 conventions a year. Come out and meet us, come out and talk to us, check out some of our titles, and really try to support the independent press, not just Top Shelf, but all the independent press publishers. It's a very difficult time that we're in with the economy and so forth, and publishing is always a very difficult thing, and it's important to show a little bit of support. You know, $20-$30 sales from a bunch of different people really do make a difference at the end of the year, whether, you know, you're ready to rock and roll the following year or not. So, yeah, support the small press in all the endeavors that you enjoy.
So we've just got a couple minutes. In the next couple months, January and February, what are some of the places people will find you at events?
Let's see. We've got the first big shows start around March, and we'll be doing a staple in Austin, Texas, WonderCon, which is in Anaheim, California this year, C2E2 in Chicago in April, also MoCA in Chicago, which is in New York. We'll be at, let's see, of course, Comic-Con in July, and then in the fall shows, Baltimore, SPX, and New York Comic-Con. You know, those are the things we do. And in the early part of this year, some of the key books we have coming out and around the March time frame is Harvey Pekar's Cleveland, which is a really important graphic novel by Harvey that's being published posthumously. And
oh, wow.
Blue by Pat Grant, Jeff Lemire's Lost Dogs, The Lovely Horrible Stuff by Eddie Campbell, WYSIWYG by Ed Piskor, which is a fictionalization of the computer hacker movement, and it is fantastic. I mean, it's really gonna rock some people. And The Underwater Welder, which is Jeff Lemire's next big magnum opus literary piece after Essex County, will be a big summer release, as well as the concluding chapter of League Volume 3, which is called Century 2009, by Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill, and that'll be a big summer debut as well. So those are some of the highlights. There'll be a lot more things coming out in 2012, but those are just a few things that we've already penciled in.
Well, Chris, as always, it's amazing how fast 30 minutes can fly by. I appreciate you coming on the show. Definitely look forward to having you and some of your artists and authors in the future to talk about Top Shelf and the things that you guys have going on there. But thanks for coming to the show. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me, man. It was an honor. Thank you so much.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll see you again next week on Behind the Mask.
Bye-bye.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.